Hello, people, and welcome back to the Outer Bounds podcast. We are, it's no longer the dynamic duo, it's now the big three. We are now back with Sam and the Bass. How are we doing?
I'm all good, man. I'm all good. I like that intro, the big three, though. I like it.
Yeah. Miami, what's it called? We've got Miami or...
Hey, listen, give me Chris Bosh. I just want to be in the background, get my money, get my rings, and just enjoy life.
I hear it.
I'll be LeBron.
I'm about LeBron, you know.
That's so cool. And then hopefully, if Kojo ever decides to come back, then we'll be Golden State running the full All-Star thing. But
Richard's Richard will definitely be Draymond in Golden State. Definitely.
Nah. I need some credibility. I need some scoring credibility. Let me be KD. Actually, let me be Steph. Let me be Steph. I want to be Steph.
Hey.
But yeah, as I said, we are back with the big three. Say again?
Miami had a four with Ray Allen, and you can throw in Mario Chalmers, so you give a bit of respect.
But it's not the same, though, because you see on that Golden State, that big four, whatever you want to call it, like, Clay could Clay could heat check, Steph's going to do his thing, KD was doing his thing, and at that time, Draymond was Draymond, innit? He was getting triple-doubles, he was being effective, innit? But, yeah, that was a good time.
Word to my white grandfather, Ray Allen saved LeBron James's legacy, but we're
going to
move.
Guess out. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back next week for another.
That's just blasphemy. End the pod right there.
I have to say LeBron legacy. But we'll get on to basketball later, as you know. Sam, City fan, and we had Chelsea versus Man City yesterday, which a lot of people have been calling the game of the season yesterday because, I mean, 8 goals in one game, what's not to like? And it was such an entertaining game from the prospects of another Big Six team have now said they've had the worst performance of the season against Chelsea. So, I mean, you know what they say, Showtime Blues, we're carrying the Premier League at the moment, even if it's from 10th. But obviously, the general consensus is obviously Chelsea's coming away happy from that game and Man City coming away from unhappy with that game. Do you feel like Chelsea did enough to win the game? Do you think it was a fair game? You think Man City were the better team? What was your take on the game as overall? We'll start with the City fan first.
Look, I'm not going to be biased here like some people, innit? I think a point was deserved, but if either team was able to win, I would have been mad, but both teams created enough chances, had good spells in the game where they were dominating to actually take that victory, innit? So, from my side as a City fan, I think that's the worst I've seen City play in a very long time. Like, Rodri, who we obviously came up clutch, but overall in the game, he wasn't the normal Rodri that we would see. Especially also Diaz as well. Diaz was smelly. I've never seen Diaz play that bad. Lunging into tackles, hesitant, making mistakes. And I think, do you know what it was? I think City as a team, I think we went into that match thinking, cool, we're going to steamroll Chelsea. And we probably thought that Chelsea's going to sit back and try and play on a counter-attack. And that wasn't how Chelsea came out. Chelsea said, okay, do you know what? We're going to match you player for player, position for position. And yes, we know Chelsea's in a sticky state at the moment. But considering they've spent $1 billion, they've got 100 million plus midfielders in their midfield. Like, they've spent money, so it shouldn't be a surprise. Do you know what I mean? So, yes, Chelsea did their thing. They actually did surprise me. I didn't expect that. I thought we'd probably win like 3-0, 3-1 or whatnot. But, yeah, I think a draw was good because both teams had chances. Both teams made some mistakes. The refereeing was poor at some points as well, which we're probably going to discuss as well. But all in all, a draw was there. Like you said, City fans, we came out disappointed. Chelsea fans and their players were tweeting like they won and they went top of the table. So it just shows you the state of affairs where Chelsea is and the mindset that City fans have in it. So, yeah, a draw was I would say I'll take the draw and it was all right. We move.
Obviously, just a bust before we come to you. I think, obviously, I get what you're saying. I do think, obviously, when you look at the whole game, when you concede 4 goals in a game, you can't really see you should have won. I think the thing is why I feel like Chelsea were just slightly better in the game was from the simple fact of, I feel like Chelsea's defence, especially Walker, Diaz and Govador, I probably didn't say his name right. I thought they were shaky the whole game. Whereas in with Chelsea's defense, backline, Reece James, Cucurella, Thiago Silva, and Disasi, in general, I don't think our defense was bad. I feel like we just had lapse in concentration because obviously we were to just go through the four goals. First of all, I don't think the first goal was a penalty from the simple fact of, yes, Cucurella grabbed Haaland, but Haaland grabbed him first. And I feel like if Haaland didn't do what he did, Cucurella would never be in that position. So that's the reason. Like, if you're just singling out the Cucurella grab alone, I can see, yes, that's
Cucurella a penalty. Grabs first, bro. Come on, don't oh, lie.
Wait, putting your hands on someone isn't... Cucurella put his hands on Haaland so that Haaland doesn't get a jump on him because he's more physically imposing, he's the smaller defender. For Haaland to get in front, Haaland pulled Cucurella to get the jump on him to get in front. And then, obviously, Cucurella's already in that loose position. That's when he then reacts. So, in my opinion, that's not the pen. Obviously, the second goal, the header, the Akanji header, I think that was from a set piece where we were just sleeping. Then Haaland scores the third goal, which we were just caught in the counter-attack. I think as great as Enzo is, and I need to touch on Enzo a bit later because I think he's getting a lot of unfair criticism. But when Enzo is the trailing holding midfielder, it's like he's not stopping anybody on the counter-attack and then you get what you got. And then the last goal is a deflection. So it's like you see that Lampard video when it's like bum shit goal, lucky goal.
But yeah. But bro, I hear what you're saying. But even your first goal, if we didn't get that penalty, I think your first goal would have been disallowed because we saw Cucurella pulling on Rodri, which would have been a foul. We saw the block, which he did, and then Cole Palmer did, which allowed that space for Silva to score. So I think that
double screen, exactly. That's in a
situation where the referee said, oh, maybe we might have given a soft penalty away to Man City. Let's reciprocate that result into giving Chelsea that goal. Even the penalty, I'm not going to say Diaz didn't touch Borja, but if you look at it first, he did nick the ball first and then he slid into the player. I don't know what you expect him to do in that type of terrain, but like I said, I'm happy to just get the point there because when you look at the game, there were so many errors and mistakes that City didn't usually do. Like you said, in defense, like people don't realize how important John Stones is to the way we want to play in terms of that transition from defense to midfield and back. And we saw it with Akanji doing it sometimes, which was okay. But then when Diaz tried to do it, when he tried to step into midfield, he was basically like in a no man's land. And you would just see like Cole Palmer, you would see Conor Gallagher, and you would probably, I can't remember who the other person was, but they would just swarm. And it was like 3-on-1. And then we're just outnumbered, didn't it? But I'm going to let Abbas speak. But yeah, that's my kind of points in terms of counteracting where you said we didn't really deserve the penalty.
So do you know what? If I'm being real, like at the start of the game, you take the point. But I think one thing I'll say about this game that you said at the start was the fact that Chelsea would sit back. If you watch Chelsea all this season, I say this all the time, Chelsea, and I'm going to say pause on this before, but I'm called the 25-minute spunky team. The first 25 minutes of every single game, go watch it back. They will attack. There will be waves of attack. The only difference is they're not clinical in them waves of attacks. Now, for the remainder of the game, once they don't break them down for the first 25 minutes, I think the Pochettino energy dies out on them. I think that's what you're also seeing with Chelsea slowly and slowly with the project. They're becoming a lot more fitter. They're able to continue attacks for a lot more quicker. They're a lot more resilient as well in terms of, okay, even if we go 1-0 down, we carry on. We did it against Tottenham. We were the better team against Tottenham, even when it was 11 versus 11. In this game as well, we didn't just play for the first 25 minutes and then we basically got tired. We played the way throughout the entire game. For the actual result, 4-4, look, it's an anomaly result. You're not going to get them type of things. But I'll say this, when it comes to Chelsea, the criticism we had last year was the fact that Chelsea can't score goals. They can't score goals. How can they not score goals? We've scored 8 against Spurs and City now, regardless of how they come or when they come. My only issue right now with Chelsea, Chelsea realistically are in a better position. I mean, better position than what the actual league reflects. The only problem is the two teams they've scored heavily against are teams that also like to go on the front foot.
Yeah.
When they play, like this little period that everyone called the death period that Chelsea are going to play, I look back and I thought, it is a death period if we don't click. But the second we click, we're going to play teams who are also going to be playing advanced with the ball, who also need to score or want to score. And that's going to play in our favour because that gives us space. When you then switch to playing teams that will basically sit in their own penalty box or just ahead of that with two banks of four, that's where we struggle because we'll recycle left to right, and there's no, pause again, penetration through the middle. I'm going to put that out there. So that's what I'll say. When this came, we showed, I think, what you can see probably more from Chelsea in this little wave of tricky games is the fact that the Pochettino fitness is there. We can go longer than 25 minutes in attacking waves and be, again, I thought someone was going to laugh there, but we can go longer than 25 minutes, whereas previous games, if we didn't get a result, if we didn't score, if we didn't capitalise, I was like, it's just a matter of time till somebody else is going to score against us. I think that's slowly changing. But overall, I'll be honest with you, I kind of wanted the 3 points, you know. We had chances. I think overall, if you look at overall the clear chances, I would say Chelsea had the better chances. Let's be honest. If Malo Gusto isn't Malo Gusto and it's someone else, he's popping that in the corner.
But look at Haaland, though. That's a shot Haaland normally scores, and he'd even place it.
Timing.
No, but he already skated past thingy, though.
Who would you say had an easier chance to score? Haaland or Gusto?
Haaland, because Haaland's a goal scorer. He's a goal getter. Like, I ain't seen Melo Gusto score in it, but I know when you
I'm not on about the player. I'm just talking about the chance. You take away the player, whose chance is easier?
You can't, score? Though. You can't, though. Because
no, you can, because I just said if you take Malo Gusto out, if he had fallen to the right individual, that could have been this if so, but I get that completely. Exactly. I'm just saying,
because it could have fallen to Jackson, who's a striker, but you guys wouldn't have confidence in Jackson scoring from there either.
No, bro, listen.
He bagged against your team.
Hey, listen.
I said he bagged against your team. Don't be disrespectful.
Yeah, but again, whose fault was that? Why did he bag? Because Diaz slid for no reason. He didn't need to slide. Yeah. So once Conor Gallagher shot, he's on the floor, and then my man's there to get the putback, the tapping. If Diaz stay on his feet, Jackson ain't gonna get past him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a bit weird that we speak about Chelsea like this. I know they're going for a transition, but they've spent so much. But we talk about Chelsea like they're a Brentford, but you got a deeper, like, if you're gonna, like, they're using small boy tactics against big boys, but they've got players equivalent to the big boys, which is mad.
Should I tell you why?
The reason I say that is because you guys are happy to play against bigger teams, yeah, that are going to attack and going to give you space. But with the quality that you have, you should be able to break down a Nottingham Forest, a breakdown of Brentford. But you guys,
if you really think about it, how many teams can actually break down them teams?
Lots of teams. Liverpool can. Like, if you go to the teams, the top six that have spent that money, I would expect that. If my team spent £1 billion, we should not be struggling to break down Bournemouth at home.
Okay,
give you an answer. Liverpool drew 1-1 to Luton. We smoked them 3-0.
No, but you was at home. I'm talking about in a specific situation. Away from home is a bit difficult. Like, you know, it's a tight, compact ground. You might not do that. But at home, if Liverpool play them at home, Mo Salah's bagging. They're not losing to.
I'm all right with that. My point is that mainly if we go away, I think you'll have load rock. At home, I always expect how many games is that? 18 home games you get in a season. Yeah. I say out of them, I expect 13 wins minimum at home.
I get that, but look at the teams you lost to at home. Who have you lost to at home? You lost to Forest and you lost to Brentford. I guess you probably lost to more. I don't know who else, but...
No, but my point is, even in them losses, so the Brentford one was exactly what I said in my little soliloquy type of thing, because first 25 minutes on top of them, but because we just didn't have that fitness level at this moment that I think we're slowly progressing to.
I don't think it's that, because when I've seen Chelsea play well, it's against teams that are in the top six where they can have that, not in a sense small team mentality, but bait you into thinking that, okay, we're going to sit back, but we've got quality to hurt you as well. And teams forget that. It's like...
That's how it is. Okay, so in my eyes, the way I see it is, I think there's three things with it. I think one is, and this... Obviously, this stat doesn't generalize the whole thing. I think out of the 12 Premier League games we played this season, we've only lost one of those games on XG. And I think a lot of the games this season, over the course of the whole game, I feel like Chelsea have been better against, even if it's the lower league opposition. I think where the problem does come against the bigger team compared to the smaller team is, remember I said this last week, first of all, these Chelsea footballers, it pains me to say, but they're just not football smart at times, innit? And also, we're not clinical enough. So what tends to happen is, as Abbas said, in the first 25 minutes here, we can come out gun blazing, we create all our chances and blah, but we're not clinical. When we do go on and concede on the other end, these teams tend to go deeper and they're now hard to break down. If Man City score one against you, they're not sitting back. If Arsenal score one against you, they're not sitting back. You saw Tottenham, what they were doing. One of the dumbest things I've seen in football, and Liverpool are not doing the same thing. So it's with us at the moment is we kind of lack patience to know that if things don't go well for us against these small things in the first 30 minutes, the drop-off is crazy. And I think one of the games that, not the only game, one of the games that I would say epitomizes it for me perfectly was when we played against West Ham earlier in the season, when the first like 40 minutes was one of our most dominant performances of the season. Yeah, Enzo goes on to miss a pen and they go on a score. And it turns in, the rest of that game was then one of the worst performances I've seen from Chelsea over the season. But then, because West Ham know the team they are, they're not going to give the opportunity to start countering, attack them and all this kind of stuff. So it's also why I've also said that these games, even though I do think we're better than Liverpool, we drew. We were better than Arsenal, we drew. I think Man City, even game, and then obviously we're better than Tottenham. Even though we've played really well against these big teams, these are the games that are going to give me the confidence to believe Chelsea are going to go on and do something.
That's what I'm getting to.
Pep mistakenly admitted it, that Chelsea cannot break down low blocks. And as I said, I don't think it's a thing where we can't break. I think it's a thing when we face adversity against the low blocks, it's kind of like, ah, fuck, what do we do now? So I do think things will get better with Chelsea and stuff like that. As I said, I'm not going to be too mad because Pep is still in the league. And as much as Pep is here, like, even if we were playing well, we're not winning the league anyway. So, I mean, let's just hope that we can find some kind of scandal. Like, I'm sure he's been racist before. I'm sure Pep has been racist before. If someone can just dig it up, so I can
I'm saying this. You guys know how much I love Skip Bayless, right?
Yeah.
Me and Skip, we follow the similar trends. Got another guy that I like as well. Shout out Simon Jordan. He said something of value. He said, Chelsea are looking to win the league in 2 to 3 years. And I'm with him. So I believe that 2 to 3 years, I believe...
Pep has to be gone. Because I've had enough.
I think you can beat Pep, and I'll tell you why. And again, this is not a criticism of Pep. It's not a criticism of City. But if you look at the points, slowly they're reducing in terms of what you may need to win the league.
But can you guys keep up with that, though? It's easy to say it's getting lower, but can people keep up with that?
I think one of the biggest deciding factors here is it will kind of be scary, which we don't know when it's come back, but when KDB comes back. Because I think a lot of people will try and say that Man City may not need KDB
to win
the league and stuff like that. And maybe that could be true. But then when you look at the seasons that Man City have absolutely dominated, those dominance of what Man City have had, they need KDB to do that. So I think it can still be wraps in, like, if KDB decides to come back in January and he picks up his best player in the league form, then at that point, no one else can come up. So I don't know.
Quick hot take. Do you want a quick hot take on this? You can clip this up, whatever date we're on right now. When KDB comes back, you're not getting KDB. Respectfully, the player's finished. When you get certain injuries at a certain age,
I can't co-sign that one. I'm sorry.
I know what Bass is saying. Those muscle type injuries, especially at players at his age, it is a diminishing law where, okay, cool, you might diminish and go backwards. But I just think Man City are going to take their time in terms of how they bring him back.
I'm going to be honest with you. I've said this before. I say it to all my boys as well. This generation, I'm talking the 90 generation players, you got your Hazards, your Neymars, who has Gareth Bale, for example, they're all retired early. Neymar's retired. Whether people want to admit it or not, Neymar's retired. He's not playing in Europe again. He's playing in Saudi for a reason. A lot of the deciding factors were injuries. And obviously, Real Madrid, you could kind of say with Bale, he didn't want to play in. He wasn't featured. But he had done what he wanted to do, and he was also injured. Kevin De Bruyne has been injury-free. So has Mo Salah. Let them pick. Kevin De Bruyne has had that one big injury now that's hit him back, that's given a proper setback, mentally, recovery-wise and all that. Coming back from that, if he comes back, hits anything of that Kevin De Bruyne form, I'll be surprised personally.
Quick question.
I hope you're right, but you're going to be wrong.
You guys are Chelsea fans, yeah? Because this is something that I'm just trying to figure out as well. Like, what do you see the future for Poch? Do you see him lasting beyond that 18 months? Or do you think Boehly and the rest of his guys are going to try and get a more, I don't know, bigger name coach? Like, what's you guys' thoughts? Do you think he's going to be there for longer than the 18 months? Like, that's something that has been playing on my mind. Like, because there's certain players that now they're getting the glory because Poch likes, I always say this to my other guys, like, Poch likes guys that there's no hassle with them. They're kind of young and he can kind of mold them, i.e. the Gallaghers, the Cole Palmers, like, Cole Palmer's U-man star boy now. He loves him, innit? But, like, yeah, what do you guys see, like, the Pochettino fit and moving forward, what happens?
So I think with Poch, because I think Poch is the first manager since, I'm trying to think of, because before Poch, there was Conte. So I said Poch probably our first manager since Mourinho, yeah? That I feel like all the players universally love. Like, because even with Tuchel, when he came in, there's always been talks of, has he lost his dressing room as this, and players were beefing him. And even when they came close with the whole Nonny situation, even though Poch hasn't been here for that long to probably cause any problems, but even with the whole Nonny situation, you can see how quick that was resolved compared to like what you saw with Sancho and Ten Hag. And as I said, I think this season is going to be whatever this season is like. Poch is definitely going to see out this season, whatever. But I think if next season he can do a thing where we finish in the top four, even though Champions League is probably top five now, but if he can finish top four, top three, I think the board would definitely keep him. Because, I mean, we all talk about what the Chelsea model is, and although Todd Boehly has had a bad start in terms of, obviously, you sack Tuchel quite early, you bring in Potter, you sack him, then you make that disgraceful decision of putting Lampard back in charge. I do really believe that Todd Boehly, especially as you can see, we signed a lot of young players, he wants to bring stability in terms of the managerial position as well. So I think if it's a situation, if it's going to be a thing like Potter where we just can't win, when we win like two games in 4 months or something like that, then obviously he's going to have to like disappear. But with Chelsea, I don't think we're in the situation with United, whereas in no matter who you bring in, the situation can be solved. I think there's more responsibilities at the manager's feet of if things don't succeed. So I think if he can do a thing, whereas we can finish top three, we don't look embarrassing, even though that's not Chelsea standards with what we've had in the last 25 years, I think he'll be here past the 18 months.
I think with Poch, I kind of agree with Richard. I don't think he's going to lose the dressing room because for two reasons. One, the squad that he's got is too young for him to lose, if that makes sense. And two, he's not ostracising any players that have big value. So Raheem Sterling, I've always said there's two leaders on this team to a point. Thiago Silva, whether he's got the captain armband or not, and Raheem Sterling in terms of the attacking line. Both of them guys seems like they're settled starters in the team, so they're happy. If they're happy, the guys below them are going to be happy because they'll feed off that energy, like, okay, cool. Like, we've seen the Mikel clip where John Terry rules the dressing room. The big guys rule the dressing room. The gaffer doesn't really have as much power. If they want to kick him out, they'll make sure they'll be able to kick him out. If them guys were pissed off at any point, I'm pretty sure they'll be able to initiate some form of player power and be able to work their magic there. I think because both them guys are playing, they feel respected, they're able to obviously be informed. I think that helps Pochettino. And then secondly, like I said, because the other guys are younger around them, similar to Arteta in a way, came in, got rid of the old players. The only difference here was when Pochettino came in, there was a younger core already there, but he's able to gain that respect from them and basically, in some way, shape, or be a father figure. I always think that, you know, when you look at a manager, the age versus the player they were want, you want them to be a father figure rather than a brother figure, if that makes sense, in terms of the age gap. Like, if you look at Ten Hag, Ronaldo, again, I don't know the age gap completely, but if it's under 10 years or about 10 to 15 years, it's going to be hard, if that makes sense, to do that father figure type of concept. Whereas here, if you look at it outside of probably Thiago Silva, I don't think anybody else is under 15 years, 20 years younger than Pochettino, so it helps him assert his authority. And right now, as long as we're doing well, I think for the first time I said it, there's less pressure on Chelsea to actually succeed. What I mean by that is, in terms of winning the league type of thing, just a case of progressing because they were so shit last year. But that will kick in, and then it's going to be a case of, Poch, can you handle the pressure?
Yeah. Obviously, I 100% agree with everything you're saying. Obviously, just before we move into the next topic, I just want to give a big, big shout out to Enzo Fernandez because I'm a huge fan of Enzo Fernandez, yeah? And I think some of the stuff that is coming out is being very, very stupid to the point where it's in... I don't know how it's going to this point, and it's going to make me sound like a hater, but I'm not, because I like the work he's been doing this season, but I can't get around how people have watched Chelsea this season and I've come to the conclusion that Gallagher has been a better player than him this year. I think it's been a bit baffling to me, and I think... The only thing I can think of is two things. Is one, price tag. So if someone is 100 million and someone is from the academy, you don't do much to stand away from 100 million. People need to do a lot more. And I think Gallagher just looks busy on the pitch, especially with the high press and all that kind of stuff. But as I said, we've not had a midfielder since Enzo in our team, since Fabregas has come in. Like, somebody that controls the midfield. And I said it before, like, early on the season, you talk about midfield that all he wants to do is progress the ball forward. Like, you've got midfielders in the league that is always sideways. If Enzo passes the ball sideways for me, I believe there was no forward options to do, because that's how much he... And I've even seen the stats, Rich. Let me even go and find it, because I just want to let people know.
Are you on about that tweet?
Abbas retweeted that one.
Listen.
No, do you know what I like Enzo, but sometimes, you know, I think fans get too caught up in stuff. From when you start off the retweet and post, he was first in progressive passing, all you got to just do is just watch the game, and the eye test will tell you how well someone's played.
Yep, you're not wrong there.
I don't, all that, like, that's why I don't go and say, GA, because end of the day, that's what everyone looks at, innit, or whatever. If I watch a game, this guy controlled, dominated, you know, progressive passing, I don't need to go and get a stat to say he was first in the second, because your eye test should just tell you what's good. But like,
this is the thing.
And the
way he does it, sorry for quitting you guys, the way he does it, your eye test will show it to you, but it won't show it to you as in it's right in your face, because it's just seamless. This is what I would say to fans right now. Watch the games. Don't go on flash scores and make a judgment. Flash scores is not going to give you the correct thingy. Yeah. The full round picture of Enzo Fernandez. What you'll see with Enzo Fernandez, you mentioned it yourself with John Stones being that progressive line between defence to midfield.
Yeah.
He's that progressive line from, I would say, the first half in the midfield to the second half. And again, it only works because obviously he's got Caicedo next. If he's isolated by himself, 100%, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But his ability to pick the ball up and pass around, it's easy, it's effortless. Which is why it's not highlighted too much.
And as I said before, I like the work Gallagher has done for us this season. I think compared to last season, he was one of the top five players or top three players I wanted out of the squad. And I feel like he's played well enough to keep his place in the squad. I still think he's a bench player for Chelsea. And I do feel like players like Cole Palmer and Nkuku and those players that occupy that number 10 position will eventually come in and take his place. So, go on.
That's my next point. What happens when Lavia's fit? And then Nkuku's fit, because there's a lot of players at the moment that, you know, are getting that privilege of playing because certain players are injured and whatnot. But then also, you got to go with
the player. So right now, as for Lavia, I don't think he'll be a starter, and I don't think he can. He can't because if you bring him in, then now you've got three attacking options. So you've got three attacking options between Palmer, Jackson, Sterling, Mudrick. Noni, I don't know if I should count Noni, but Noni and then Kuku. So you got these six players, especially with the way that we play now, is if you're going to play like the 4-2-3-1 system, I don't really like Enzo as a number 10. I prefer him to be a number 8. And you've got Caicedo, who already does the number 6 role and stuff like that. So if it was at the beginning of the season, when the season first started, I would say... Yes, and Lavia would be starting. But I think because the way the season has panned out and Cole Palmer has done such a great job, you can't drop him. Raheem Sterling is doing such a good job, you can't drop him. Jackson, I think he's been up and down this season. But then if he's
gonna six goals, 11 games, 12 games, whatever it is,
yeah, I'm running, you can't drop him in it. And so
you think Bowley wants he wants Nkuku spent 55 or 65 sitting on the bench. Lavia,
So what I'm saying is Nkuku is definitely going to be a starter. Yeah. I'm saying I think Nkuku takes Gallagher's place.
What I'll say is, I'll say this about what's going to happen going forward. You see the way, like Mudryk, listen, he spent a lot of peas on Mudryk. However, Mudryk's not guaranteed to always be the starter, and it works. He comes on, he does his thing. Sometimes he starts, sometimes he's not. We won't 100%. You know, I'll say it's this. Like,
bad starter, but
Lavia will probably be in a similar position until he might do what I call the five games, five string of games, where it's like, oh, wait a minute. He's played bang, bang, bang. Five games in a row. It'll happen just seamlessly if it's going to happen. If it's not going to happen, it just won't, where he will play. He'll play a significant amount of games where it'll be a combination of coming off the bench, starting, and there'll be an element of rotation, similar to like how City kind of do at times, where Foden may not always play, but then if he's in, it's like, oh, Foden's starting. Yeah, we expect it. But if he's not, it's like, okay, Foden's starting, but it's not a conversation or a big topic, kind of. Similar with like Jack Grealish is a topic sometimes because of his price tag. And I think Mudryk was a conversation at the start, but I think people have just grown to it. I think it'll be interesting though.
The reason I asked that is because obviously there was a big battle between Lavia, and we saw what Lavia did when he was at Southampton, dominating in a team like Southampton. So if I've spent 50 million, which nowadays 50 million is nothing, that's still someone that I do expect to be starting a lot of their games. Do you know what I mean? So obviously,
you know what it will be.
You've got 200 million plus midfielders, so that kind of alleviates that.
I get what you're saying, but the position the people he's competing with is Enzo and Caicedo, and he can't.
Even with, for example, you said Chelsea play a 4-2-3-1, which on paper they do, but when you actually watch them in the game, they defend in a 4-4-2 and they build up in a 3-2-5, where Reece James becomes the highest wing on the right hand side, and then Cole Palmer goes inside and becomes a midfielder. So there is a position, there is a way where that could work, because at the end of the day, it's not like he uses Cole Palmer as a inside forward or inverted winger anyway. He comes in and you create that overload with a box midfield. So it might be a thing where that is the trend now, where everyone's playing four central midfielders. So you might be able to get Lavi in the team. But I'm just saying, from the optics of money, how's that all going to work? Obviously, you've got players like Leslie. Even though you spent 30 million, he's not meant to be starting.
Listen. I'm going to tell you this year. There's another player that we're not talking about. We're talking about him. What happens when Fofana comes back? If we're talking about big money that's been spent,
there you go.
He's probably the one.
I'm telling you.
Anything that has a conversation.
Yes, the Sassy out, though. You take the Sassy out. That's an easy choice.
I'm not going to lie to you. If we're doing our bits and we're winning with clean sheets, I can't fault him.
Bro, I saw the Sassy tweeting, but he's talking like, yeah, we go whatever. You can see the four goals. What's going on?
I'm never going to cap to you. I do think for Fofana at Chelsea, he's kind of done.
Wow.
It's sad to say, but at the moment, when he comes back, he's going to be fifth choice centre back.
He's what about your other Don? What's it called? Balashil as well. Where's he?
He's on his men. He's on the men as well.
In my opinion, I think he's our second best centre back in our team.
You better show.
Yeah. So I think eventually, but then because he hasn't played much this season and the run of game the Sarsi's been doing, I think he is. But I think Thiago Silva is still our best defender. And I think better show is number two, Cole is number three. Then it's now the Sarsi and Fofana. So I don't see how Fofana gets back into.
Fofana was there competing with Saliba. Like,
that's what injuries do to you. That's what injuries do to you. It's sad. But hold the car, I don't spend too much. Obviously, just quickly, just on this topic. Sterling, because another Chelsea player, has been doing really well this season, and even with England having to send some players back, Madison and someone else, Sterling still can't get into the team. Just quickly, do you agree that Sterling doesn't have a place in the England team right now, or do you feel like Southgate is drunk once again?
He's drunk. I think there's an agenda. I don't know what's happened within like the last, obviously the World Cup, something must have happened there, because for you not to like include him in your squad in, I think, the last five England call-ups, and then you do have these injuries, and then you decide to call Cole Palmer and Rico Lewis. It's an abomination. Like, he should be there. Like, he's played well. Rashford hasn't played well this season. Grealish has been in and out of form. Then we see Henderson getting called up, and he's playing in Saudi in front of 500 people. We see, what's it called? Calvin Phillips playing, getting called up, and he didn't play no game. We see the guy was getting called up when he was playing poor, even though he's still playing poor, but he's a starter now. Like, so what Southgate has said in terms of how he picks his team based on form has been a lie since he's been manager anyway. So it's just
Can I say one thing before? Just one thing to Canada as well. I'm not even gonna compare him to all the Declan all the Calvin Phillips and what's his name and Jordan Henderson, because I don't know, they played different positions. The first England call-up...
Based on form, though.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I 100% agree with you. When the, like, obviously the season started, the first England one, when Sterling didn't get picked, I haven't disagreed with it then, but I understood it because, I mean, Jack Grealish has just come off winning the treble. Rashford has just come off scoring, like, 30-something goals this season. But at the point we are at this season, Sterling has massively outperformed both Rashford and Grealish. And what's his name? Southgate is asking, well, who do you take out? Take out the players that he's outperforming based on form. And it's not, and what even more frustrating, it's not a thing of Sterling has just been doing this for like a couple months. Sterling's been one of England's best players over the past 5 years. Yeah, he's been one of the best wingers in the Premier League ever since even before he made that thing to Liverpool. So just because he decides to have one bad season, if he doesn't retain his form, he should be allowed back in. So the whole thing has been a bit baffling.
Do you know what I'll say? This is what I'll say with Raheem right now, right? He's playing good for his club. Screw the country. As long as I'm on that plane in Germany, that's all I care about.
But it doesn't work like that.
I hear what you guys mean. So that's where the conversation for me personally will be, because this is what I'll say. I know a lot of managers say based on performance, but the reality is, I always say this as well. If you go to a tournament, until there's value, or if you're struggling to qualify particularly, I don't mind actually other players playing in to try to get some rotational time to see how they actually fit. Can they actually play? Can they get any form? And as much as like that's we killed Rashford, I hear what you guys say, because I'm with you lot for about 90%. The other 10% says to me, these games don't mean shit to a point. Let me just bring in other players to see what I can do with them. However,
you don't play enough games for them to try and that.
Yeah, and also, if that was the case, then don't call up Harry Kane and then put Sterling. But I agree what you're saying, because when I look at the teams that he's been calling up, I know in the World Cup, he's not taking Harry Kane, Callum Wilson and Watkins. It's going to be Harry Kane, either Callum Wilson and Watkins. And then, like you said, when it's time to go on the plane, he probably might take Sterling. But just into the run-up and the lead-up to a tournament, that's not how you should treat someone that's important to you, that you value. At the end of the day, he's not doing
at the end of the day, it's the same reason why players will just drop out as well.
Of course.
They're not going to drop out if the plane journey is for an international tournament, but they'll drop out because, like, do I really care type of thing?
No, but it's like, if you don't get called up to something all the time, you just feel, I don't really care. I'm not going to that next thing. So, like, getting called up is the build-up. It's the culmination to, okay, cool, I'm likely to make it on the plane. At this present time, Sterling's looking at it like, okay, however good I play, I don't think I'm getting on the plane. So, like, you can't have that in someone's mindset, because if you do try and call me up, I'm not saying Sterling's going to do that, but he might be like, no, I don't want to get called up. So you have to kind of bed him in quickly.
Yeah.
You can't say,
I'm doing it from the devil's advocate side of things. Yeah, of course. Give a shit. Because right now, bro, your form is top tier for your club. Stay at club and let's get you fully fit. Let's keep
you want to get recognition for that. Everyone likes a little bit of recognition, though.
This is the thing. If he doesn't go on the plane and he plays the way he has done, everything's going to come down on Gareth Southgate anyway. So Gareth knows what I mean by that is Gareth will, he's got a brain, he will pick Raheem Sterling. It's the same way I remember, what's the brother's name? Greedy. Jesse Lingard. Yeah, when people were like,
Greedy.
Yeah, come on, it's Jesse Lingard, isn't it? when people are thinking, yo, this guy's going to the World Cup, whatever tournament, I was thinking that he's not going, bro. You don't go in because of 6 months of form. It's not going to work that way. With Raheem Sterling being a mainstay for a full season, and everyone with any sort of eyeballs, any sort of brain will say, how are you not taking Raheem Sterling? It would be crazy if he doesn't go and continues his form. But these call-ups, come on. If you ain't calling me up, that means I've got 2 weeks to chill. I'll do some training. I'll take a little plane.
Go Jamaica.
Yeah, go Jamaica. Do whatever you want. Maybe there's a festival you can check out.
Got some Clarks, string vest. You know the vibes.
Yeah. Like, enjoy yourself. You've got 2 weeks vacation to a point.
Yeah, I mean, Sterling, just keep doing what you're doing. We've got your back over here, regardless, anyways. So, yeah. Obviously, just switching sports, moving on to Formula One. Obviously, I feel like we haven't discussed Formula One on this channel for some time, but we're discussing it now because this Sunday or Saturday, if you live in America, or Sunday again, if you're on the West Coast or East Coast or whatever time is you guys go over there, we have got the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which I think they say is returning for the first time in like 40 odd years. And I was looking at, so I saw a graph today, you know, and it was talking about the average ticket prices for each event. Mm-hmm. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix clears any other Grand Prix that there's been this year in terms of average ticket prices. And
even Monaco.
Clears it. Clears Monaco. Like, I'm going to go to look for the video, but I can't tell you how much the difference is. So, yeah, and I've seen articles, people talk about how this is going to be the spectacle of the year in terms of Formula One. Do you guys have high expectations for this Grand Prix?
I have high expectations as an entertainment value and event, but as a race, no. Because, like, Vegas is a place that most people don't live in Vegas. They go there to just, like they call it, Sin City. You go there, gamble, whatever you want to do. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So a lot of people are going to be there because you got the Las Vegas Raiders there. You got UFC headquarters there. So we know Dana White's going to be there. You know you're going to have a lot of NBA players probably flying from LA to go there and, you know, be part of this. We've seen all the, like, big events that's happened in America, how they're magnified in it. So whether it's the Super Bowl, the Miami Grand Prix, we even see with Austin. So I don't expect any less from Vegas. Do you know what I mean? I think it's going to be a great spectacle. I think it's going to be great to watch on TV in terms of the background, the strip, the lights, everything. Do you know what I mean? And I think the precursor to that, you know, the behind the scenes, the build up is going to be great. I think that's going to be the best part that we enjoy. Like seeing Martin Brundle doing the grid walk and stuff like that. But as a race, I think it's going to be clear. I think we know who's going to win it anyway. It's probably going
to
be Max.
Yeah, but just before we get to your pass, I just want to ask you something, Sam, because you said in terms of you don't think the race will be that great, but I've seen the layout of the track and it does seem like a track that has like a lot of straights, which straights normally mean like opportunities for overtaking and stuff. So do you think that could add to the entertainment of being a great race, or do you still feel like,
look,
you're not buying it?
I'm not buying it. Hence why, like you said, the tickets have been great, but in terms of how it's been sold, I saw from Joe Pump, if you want to talk about sports business, follow him or follow Front Office Sports on Twitter. And they were saying that basically it hasn't necessarily sold out as or done as great as it they expected, because a lot of the fans are saying this season hasn't been great. And also F1 as a spectacle isn't necessarily great to watch live. And I think if you go off how this season has gone, regardless of if they're straight or you track, the car that Red Bull and Max have is going to dominate. And it's not going to be anything great. Do you know what I mean? When you're going to these type of events, you want it to be a spectacle. And you would love it to be like, you know, Lewis Hamilton, Max battling for that title, that world championship, to make it have some relevancy. But right about now, I don't think there's going to be any relevancy. We saw how bad Mercedes performed in the last Grand Prix. Max dominated from start to finish. Alonso did his thing. So I just think it's going to go the same way. Do you know what I mean? I think it's just going to be a great spectacle in terms of it's Las Vegas. F1's always been trying to break America for the longest. Now they've got what? How many races they had?
Three.
Yeah, and I think they're looking to get to food at some point as well. So it just shows you what they're just trying to build. But I don't have any high hopes, but I'll definitely be watching it. I'll be tuned in for sure.
This is the thing. I'm with Sam with everything. The one thing I'm looking at, and I understand why they've done what they've done, but why it's 6 a.m. in the morning that it's starting in the UK. Like, I know you were saying you're going to watch the pre-build-up and stuff. I'm going to be watching it like this.
Wait, so it's starting at 6 a.m. So 6 a.m. and it goes 5 hours back. So it's going to be 1 a.m. America, right?
In some places.
In America, in New York, and in Vegas.
What course is Vegas on? Is it West, East?
I think it's in the middle, so it might be West, yeah. So it's going to be 8 hours.
It'll be about 10 or 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
there.
So that means in the East, the game will be, the thing will be at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, and then I guess in the West, it's going to be
they're catching this late night market, which is calm. I understand why they're doing it, but then at the same time, like, does that kind of show how lack of interest there is in America for this? Like, the showcase itself being in Vegas and being there to get all the pictures and everything, that works to have it at night, but then to actually really cater to the audience. O'clock's not a prime time slot. 1 o'clock is definitely not a prime. Oh. None of the slots is a prime time slot.
No, and I was gonna say, what you're saying makes sense because they got to factor in
NFL.
That's what I'd say. They don't want to compete with Big Sunday NFL, like, so they got to find a slot where it's in the middle, where they've got that little bit of gap. Like, yeah, that's what they
check. I'm a double check because I don't know if it might be on a Saturday. I don't know because
So the race is on a Saturday in America. It's just Sunday in UK.
Huh?
Yeah. So the race is on a Saturday. It's a Saturday 10 p.m. in America.
Okay. Wow! But I didn't know that.
That highlights it even more. The fact that all they're doing is we want to show you how nice it looks, but we don't really care how many people actually watch it. We know the international market will watch it. We know the US market probably doesn't care as much. Domestically to watch it, but if we can make the money, and even then, going back to your point, I saw a little TikTok thing as well. They were like, if you ever host an event in any city, you guys know, like when it comes to London, when it's the NFL or whatever, the prices on that weekend for any hotel, Airbnb is going to skyrocket. I saw the TikTok, they go, look, this is an average weekend price. Nothing has
changed. I disagree with. I disagree with the part where you said the Formula One don't care how many people in America watch it or something like that, because I think there's a reason why they've got three races over there. And if you can capture an American market in sports, there's a lot of money to be made. Like, as I said, you talk about the NFL, you talk about the NBA and all these things, and America in itself is a big market because, I mean, really, like, if you look at the size of America compared to, let's say, the size of the UK and stuff, there's only so many races that you could put over here. But whereas in
But do you know what it is? When it comes to America, when you look at F1, like, nothing resonates in F1 with American fans. There's
I think they want, they're trying to make it.
They do want to do that because obviously if they can break into America, that helps them just monetize and get more brands in it.
Yeah.
But the thing with America, like, it's not a sport that they've generally grown up with. It's not NFL. It's not NBA. It's not hockey. It's not baseball.
If you look at this motorsports, it's NASCAR.
Yeah.
And like, they're there for the Indy 500 and all that stuff.
And not even in a bad way. Even when you go to NASCAR and Indy 500 and all those type of stuff, the audience is not very diverse either. So it's like,
let's be honest.
No one's really watching it. Like, obviously, Liberty is a big American company, which they own media companies that own the Atlanta Braves. So there's lots of synergies that they can do. And hence why, like Richard said, they're trying to do a lot of races in America. Like, I remember when Bernie Ecclestone was there, he was trying to get the deed signed for a Grand Prix in New York, overlooking, going through New York and New Jersey. You see the New York skyline, but it was just something that was hard to get over the line. The timing is really weird because we've seen with Miami, we've seen it with Austin. They do it at palatable times. So with this, I get it. You need to have the skyline to get the great view of Vegas, but doing at that time in, like, you know, Europe and stuff like that, it just doesn't make sense for me. If it's Australia, I get it. If it's Japan, I get it. But America, why are we going backwards? Normally, we work forward.
Can I ask a question? Do you think, and obviously this is for you guys to have seen it all in terms of Formula One, do you think, like, the point system in Formula One should change a bit? Because, and the reason I ask that is just because of, when you win a race, you're getting 25 points and you're building up all these big leads and whatever. Mm. By the time you get to the towards the end of the season, because of how much points you can accumulate, is the thing where the championship is already done, where not a lot of people would then want to go and watch what's going on because you've already seen. Obviously, I understand that if you shorten the points will be bigger, will still be big in respect to what the points is, but then 10th place will still be 1 point, second, 9th place will still be 2 points. Whereas in if then the first place was then like, let's say 15 points or whatever, the gap between like a 10th and the first would be shorter. Therefore, by the time you get to the business end of the season, it won't be a thing of championships already wrapped up with like five races to go. Because there's no reason why a big shouldn't be sold out.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't think that's even it. I just think it's because it's just not competitive in terms of how they, like a lot of American fans, yeah, their first foray to like seeing F1 at its height was the season where Lewis Hamilton and Max were battling. And obviously he went to the last race of the season. So they've expected that to be the outlier all the time. But as myself and Abbas always say, that's an anomaly. That's not how it is. But I can't remember what year it is. Like, obviously, Richard, you might not know this. The point system that we use now wasn't always the point system they were using before.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like 2009 or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Vettel time, there was a bit of a different point system at that
time. Yeah. I can't remember if it was like just 10, 9, 8, 7, and all the way down from 10 to 1. But then now they change it to 25. And I hear what you're saying, but to be honest, if you've got a dominant car, I don't think it's going to make a difference.
And do you know what it is? Adding to that, what you see here compared to probably other seasons is one, more races, two, more sprint races. And adding that, which is probably some sprint races is a new thing. I think it's probably coming in the next couple of seasons. If you take the sprint races out, okay, it's only a few amount, but then the amount of points you get on top of that for winning, and then you could be looking at a 30 plus point season race week compared to second place type of thing. So I think that's another thing. Like, even though you make the reduction, because you add sprinting, that
you're,
gap
you still gain back on those points as well.
Yeah. So that gap won't hit. It's a case of if you're going to do that, you might then need to look at this concept of sprint and remove it. But the F1 won't do that. The sprints are the best short way to get someone. You don't need to watch 50, 60, 70 laps. You can watch 25 laps, be hooked and be like, okay, I might want to tune in for tomorrow and then be disappointed tomorrow because it's not going to be like that.
And I'm fully for sprint races as well, because I think, can't remember who said on commentary, I think the worst sprint race is better than FP3, watching FP3 anyway. I'm not mad at it.
They've always been touched on this. I heard it, I can't remember if it was the last Grand Prix or the one prior, that they, again, they've been speaking about this for ages, the reverse grid. I think that might make it entertaining, but it's not going to be entertaining for that long, because again, it's always going to be like, even if you've got, I don't know, a Williams number one, they're always going to know, okay, cool, I'm not competing against a Red Bull Mercedes. So once they get to a certain stage, they're just going to let the Red Bull, Mercedes, Renault.
Like, okay, wait a minute. We've got
anyway.
We've got 8 laps. They'll probably think, okay, we've got 8 laps. We can potentially get 1 point in this. Yo, we're going to take that. Max, go do your thing. You go. We're not going to kill our tyres. And
I don't think the reverse grid is going to work. I remember back in the day, like, it'll show my age, but like there was a Grand Prix, or there was a tournament that was called A1GP, which was basically, it was a competitor to F1, where basically everyone had the same car and it was like, who's the best driver? And I think that's the only way where you might have some entertainment in Formula One, because Red Bull, Mercedes, the top teams are always going to have the best talent to produce the best cars, and they're going to have better budgets to spend and ideation and ideology. So it's a tough one just to kind of get the optics of getting Formula One to be enjoyable at this present time. I don't know what
they can quickly do. If they ever push the idea of reverse grid and stuff, I think that's so dumb, because sport is about being the best, not because you're the worst. The only sport or only country that works where if you're the worst you get rewarded is actually in America.
Yeah,
because you get the number one draft pick. Every other sport rewards you for being good, doesn't reward you for being bad.
But then you got to realize that's why they have that no relegation, because they want it to be parity. Like, I know we're sidetracking, but you got to realize how that works in America, because we've seen the Suns now, they get Wemby, but then you also see in NFL, Houston Texans that have been so smelly, there was a was rewarded.
I hear why it works.
And they got CJ and they're balling. So
I guess the only way, the only funny way, as bad as it sounds, is if you win the championship, or do you get less money than the team that finishes outside of the points?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But if you get under 10 points or whatever it is as a constructor, you get a certain amount preset for you already that helps you get up to like a...
I mean, they're just trying to say you get more wins on the time, but I mean, if your car is already good and if you don't know what you're using the wins on the time for, then it's going to be hard to catch up. But just obviously, lastly, speaking in terms of making adjustments to your regular season, this year the NBA has added the play-in tournament, which has now gone on for like 2 weeks now. I believe. What do you guys make of it so far? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing? Or do you think it's just nothing? It doesn't change anything.
You want to go first, Abbas?
Yeah, so let me be honest with you. You know that you said that it's been on for 2 weeks, yeah? You see, like in England, like, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, this is like in soccer where they have a cup in between the league and they break it up. Yeah, but we promote it. Bro, I can't tell you if it's a regular season game or if a thing, if like, because there's so many games in the NBA. If I miss a cup game or NBA playing cup game, I don't feel like I've missed anything of value. Because it links in with the regular season game. I'll know if I tune in because the court's going to be different. That's the giveaway. But I will not actually know prior to, let's say, the Bucks playing the Heat. Oh, wait, this is a group game for the playing tournament versus it's a regular season. And I know it's because essentially the games also look towards your regular season record. But overall, like, I think it's one of them things where to take time to adjust to it, to enjoy it. But my only problem is, I think it's one of them things, just like how when you see in the NCAA, for example, where it's done at the end, it's done in a block period, it's classed as March Madness, it shuts off everything after the regular season, and you're everyone's locked in.
That's even how that's how they should have done it. Like
what they should have done in November.
You have to play your those games, you have a bracket, one and done. That's what you would have done. Simple.
I was hoping for instead of these group games that just randomly pop up. What is it? Friday, Sunday, Monday, whatever it is, and like nobody's gonna care. But if you take that concept that you've got, flip it into March Madness, it just works perfectly. And then even if them games also count towards your regular season, it's fine because you're still playing it in a specific blocked off period for the regular season. And then if you get knocked out, for example. That's the only problem because if the Milwaukee Bucks go all the way to the final or the Orlando Magic get knocked out in the first round, do they have 2 weeks off or what do they do? As an overall look, it's a new thing. It's cool to try it, but I think it kind of stinks the way it's marketed right now.
Yeah.
I think with me is a thing where it's in until like the finals happen where it becomes its own separate game. I think for me right now, it's just something that is nothing kind of moment. And I think in recent years, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but I feel like a lot of the stuff that the NBA and Adam Silver have tried have not been able to sustain fan interest. Now, obviously, the playing tournament was introduced, and I think that has been a great idea, has been a success. But the thing I'm talking about is then, when you look at the All-Star game, I remember the first time they introduced the All-Star game with the Kobe rule of after the third quarter, the 24-point things, and we saw how competitive that was, and everybody was like, yep, the All-Star game has been fixed, and blah, blah. Now in 2023, everyone is saying, nah, that idea has been scrapped. They did a thing where they tried to do the captain's thing. And now they're talking about going back to
East versus West, all that kind of thing.
And then even with this playing tournament, the first week that it did happen, I saw that there was a lot of like interest in terms of communication with fans. When people talk about the way the courts are looking or the games, I was seeing a lot more fan interaction about it. After the first week, I've not really heard much about it anymore. So I think it's a thing where I feel like the NBA are really struggling at the moment to come up with a concept to sustain fan interest. And I feel like this might just be another one of those things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what they should have done is like similar to like what Abbas said. And I thought that's what they were discussing. Basically, because initially the thought process was that they will have a closed off tournament, which would start in February, probably end in March. And you just play within that period of time and then you win the trophy. Because like I was saying off camera, I don't think the Golden State Warriors, the Lakers, Phoenix Suns really care if they're playing this game and it goes to their regular season record, because regardless, their regular season record was going to be their regular season record anyway. So I don't think this play-in tournament is for those teams. I think it's for the Bulls, the Magic, OKC, the Spurs, that have nothing to play for, and it gives these guys an opportunity to say they've won something, because most of the teams and players are never going to win a chip unless they move destinations to a new city. So this just gives someone like Cavs, an OKC, you got Garland, you got SGA, you got Trae Young. It's an opportunity for them to win titles, but I just don't think to the bigger guys that have been in the game for long, it don't mean nothing to them. It's just,
so this is what I was going to say about this. This is how this game, but again, this where it might ruin the balance of the NBA. But hear me out. You win the NBA playing tournament, you get a pick in the, you basically get put in the NBA lottery. So you can get a pick in the first to 10 picks or something of that nature.
Ask a question.
That for me makes it competitive. Just like, say, like here, for example, if you win the FA Cup or the League Cup, like you said, the top teams don't care, but a lower team will care. And here, if you, for the top teams to care, if you can get a pick between the first and the 10th,
it makes
adds incentive. Like, we go and try now.
Imagine, like, for example, you're the Hawks, or you're, I don't know, OKC, and you can win the play-in tournament, and that gives you a guaranteed spot for what's it called? What am I even talking about? In terms of your pick, yeah, and you can get between 1 and 5, and you got a chance to get Wemby just because you've won I don't know, the play-in or the in-season tournament. I think that's going to incentivize teams to take it with more respect and want to win it.
Wait, you see how if you win the tournament, you get 500K.
Mm.
Wait, is that with two questions? Is that the team or the players? Is
players.
The team
like,
so each players. So each player gets 500K each.
Yeah.
That's useful to some players, and it's not useful to other players.
Exactly. You think LeBron cares about 500 bands or KD? Like, what's that? It's 500 racks. Okay.
That's a Lamborghini Urus for him on a bad day.
I mean, like, if you're like on a lower league contract, then I'm sure that 500K will do a lot for you. But then if you're on a max contract, then
it would also incentivize, like Abbas said, if you did the thing where you can get a pick, it would also incentivize the team as well as the players, because now I can build within a lottery and I'm getting rewarded for winning, not tanking. Because remember, everyone's always tried to tank. We saw the Sixers tanking, trusting the process, doing it for how long, and it didn't succeed. Yeah. Imagine,
like I said, even though it's my idea, the bad problem with that is, can you just imagine if you had three of these tournaments and Milwaukee Bucks won all three? They have Giannis and a top 10 pick each year on year. That can then basically remove the balance of the NBA.
Yeah, rationale though, can get it once. If you win it, you can get it. But after that, then you don't get it again, kind of thing. Or you get rewarded in a different type of way. Maybe
your salary
might go up by another 10 million. So you can bring in someone else, or whatever you want to do. But I think the NBA have to be very creative, which we've seen in times they don't really tend to be creative enough.
Bro, Adam Silver, put me on, bro. I'm going to give you that pick. I'll give you that for free. Just send me that 500K. The teams don't want it. I'll take it, and they get a first-round pick.
Yeah. And, you know, some good stuff here. I think you guys are right. I think they need to do something. I know Tyrese Halliburton was talking about automatic playoff spot, but I just don't agree with that. But I do think they need to be creative. I really like the pick idea, but we're going to see what happens. I think I'll give it a chance to see what happens when the final game happens and it's not just embedded into a regular season game. But, you know, that is all we do have time for today. As I said, we've gone from the dynamic duo to the big three. So hopefully next week Kodjo will be back and we've got a super team over here, Golden State.
Come on, say again. I was going to be James Harden
Stop saying Ray Allen.
Over
here. Yeah. But also, this is all we have time for today. As you can see, it's been scrolling along at the bottom. Outofbounds_UK on all social media platforms, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube and Twitter. I kept my promise and I said I'll be back consistent on TikTok. it wasn't consistency, but I've been back on TikTok, so go and listen to all my takes on Chelsea, football, basketball, sports in general. If you don't have time to listen to a full episode and you want just 30 seconds, then go over there. But thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Out of Bounds podcast. And until next week, thank you. Peace.